Tales of adventure can take so many shapes, sizes, and flavors, wouldn't you say? Swashbuckling tales of heroes throwing caution to the wind and winning the hearts of all. Or world-shattering intrigue and stakes made personal by principles beyond individual mortality. Or dark, harrowing tales of madness, where those unlucky enough to find themselves within scrape by the skin of their teeth, if they scrape by at all. That variety and the fundamental truths they uncover is part of what makes adventure so grand. But what are all these sordid or soaring or bittersweet or triumphant happenings compared to the greatest adventure of all? That of mortal connection or love? Or barely concealed but intense feelings? Or propriety? Or should I better say, or best say, romance? And that is the adventure we find ourselves in today. A tale as old as time. A young woman seeking to prove to the world, others, and above all herself, that she is worth a great deal more than society has thus far deigned to measure her. And of course, those that love her enough to support her on that journey of self-discovery and growth. The Company of the Golden Tree Adventuring Guild, exploring the restricted section of the Agmar Library, will now explore the restricted sections of their own hearts in the guise of four new but similar individuals. Welcome, one and all, to Reckless Abandon. Excuse me, what I mean to say is, welcome one and all to episode 100 of Reckless Attack, a usually 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. As our guilders step through the latest and final gateway to obtain another final book, a change occurs. They are at once themselves, someone entirely new and someone very, very old. It is a beautiful fall morn on the Gold Tree Estate, a well-to-do but not palatial manner. The tranquility of the outside world filled with the sounds of crunching leaves and smells of, well, also leaves, belies the buzz going on inside. As the Gold Tree family readies for the day, the manor staff, who are considered family in all but blood, swirl with even more activity than usual. What do we do? Are they awake? Do we bring to the master first? Oh, the missus. No, the missus. No. Give it to him. He'll know what to do. Will you do it? Okay, fine. I will do it. The cook of the kitchens, a chubby mustachioed tiefling man, grabs a small fine envelope and walks out of the kitchens with purpose. Steve, who does he go find in this critical moment, and where does he find him?
Ah, excellent question. Hello, everyone. My name is Steve, and for this particular 100th episode, I shall be playing
Sylvester Lynn, the head butler for the Gold Tree family.
So, this particular tiefling rushes out and around the house and goes back into the dining area for the help. And seated at the table is a tall dragonborn gentleman, and he seems to be going through various papers and looking at orders that are coming in for various sundry items. As the tiefling walks in, the dragonborn looks up, and you can see a monocle in one eye, and he says,
"Yes, may I help you?"
Yes, sir. Well, we daren't not guess what was in this envelope, but, well, we did guess what was on the envelope, and it seems of great import to the family, and we weren't sure where to take it, and, well, we thought you might.
Let me see it.
He passes you a note that on one side simply writes in precise calligraphy, "The Gold Tree Estate," and on the other side has a green wax seal on it with an intricate feather.
Well, I dare say this is most irregular. I shall take it to the family. Thank you.
And Sylvester will stand up and quickly exit the dining area.
Who are you bringing this missive to?
Ordinarily, it would probably go to the master of the house.
Understood.
But given this particular envelope and the feather that is associated with it, this is actually going to the head lady of the house.
Where do we find Charity Goldtree on this fine morning, matriarch of the Goldtree family?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and today I am not playing checkers.
Mm-hmm.
I am playing Charity Goldtree, the head matriarch of the family.
We're all dying in the background. We can't. Jonathan, before recording, was like, "Should I use my checkers voice?" And we're like, "Yeah, I think that'll be funny."
Do I use the checkers
voice? And,
voice?
You know, it'll remind people who's who and be a nice differentiator. And then we heard it, and then we're like, and then just we all died, I think.
Like,
in a good way. But
I need a quick aside. Who's Mango in this story?
The family dog.
The family hat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Absolutely. So you find Charity Goldtree up on the second floor of our manor. And when, Sylvester, you walk in to what you know to be the family's hat room, you find Charity just fussing about with this big wall of what she has. She has a whole collection of hats, and she is just trying to place them in the right place. She's like stretching up as high as she can get, and she is this 3-foot-tall grung woman in a green dress, trying to just angle the hats just right when she sees you open the door. Sylvester, what's wrong? You're not usually here at this hour.
I am terribly sorry to have disturbed you, ma'am. But this came.
And somewhere along the way, Sylvester has picked up a small silver platter, and the envelope is neatly in the middle of the platter with the address pointing towards Charity so that she's able to read it.
I'll stop fussing with the hats just long enough to go and grab the envelope from Sylvester and break the wax seal on it.
And you know this seal. This is a seal you have been anxiously awaiting to see for months. So the mere glimpse of it in this moment captures your attention.
Sylvester, when did this get in?
Only a few minutes ago, ma'am.
And you didn't think to bring it to me faster?
I'm terribly sorry, ma'am.
Charity rips it open and just starts reading furiously.
As the lady of the house pores over this substantial piece of mail, the master of the house is busying himself with his morning as well. David, what is your character doing? Who is he? Give us his whole deal.
Hi, everyone. I'm David. And today, I am not playing Kaskarin. I'm playing something very similar.
Kaskarin adjacent.
Yes. I am playing Kendrimon Goldtree, master of this estate. Kenjamin is enjoying a nice morning in his study, in his personal study, where he has cultivated a number of his favorite interests, his favorite items, his favorite knickknacks. And he is relaxing in his chair. He's got a wooden puzzle cube in his hand that he is hard at work solving, deep in concentration in this fine fall day. He is a muscular, well-built, if not a shorter man, a dwarf perhaps, with long flowing white hair tied up in a ponytail and a short, scruffy white beard. As the man of the house, he must be presentable at all times, of course, but his fine clothes are a bit more worn after years of use. And as he, you know, fusses with the cube a little bit more, turning the final pieces into place, he exclaims, "I've done it!"
And then all of a sudden, the door to your study just slams open, and you see Charity, your beloved wife, waving around a piece of paper with Sylvester in tow, just grabbed sharply by the wrist. "Mr. Goldtree, how can you be sitting around at a time like this? Don't you know what's going on?"
And Kenjamin sets down the cube, looks at you, and says, "Charity, Sylvester, to what do I owe this honor on this otherwise tranquil day?"
"Take a look at this."
And Kenjamin gets up, pulls out his reading glasses, and slowly opens this letter. And you see his eyebrows raise. "Well, Charity, this is quite a surprise."
And where, Sophie?
Mm-hmm.
During all of this turmoil, all of this excitement, all of this upheaval, where is your character? What is she doing? What does she look like? Who is she?
Well, Violet Goldtree has known her parents' routine for several years and knows that they will not break their fast for at least another hour. So she has learned to take a morning stroll, as this is her time to herself before her mother, Charity, finishes fussing with her hats and before her father finishes with his puzzles.
As they both do. Yeah. Every morning. Unfailingly. Right. Yep.
So she is out for a stroll. Each day she tries to take a different path. No matter which path she takes, though, it is uncanny because Sylvester can always find her, no matter what. Has been able to her whole life. She is just taking the morning air and finds a quiet, peaceful tree to sit down and start reading her books.
I would like to posit this. I feel like I am mostly directing it in one particular direction.
Sure.
Jonathan.
Right. Yeah.
How is Violet's tranquil morning routine interrupted? We'll say without any leading adjectives.
So, Violet, your tranquil morning day is broken by the sound of approaching horses, of all things.
Violet looks up from her book, like straight back against the tree, and kind of gathers her long dress around her and leans around the tree to peek at who could be approaching so quickly this morning, as visitors are not likely to come this early.
And you can pick out the sound of your mother's voice from anywhere.
And you know the tone of these exact same hoof clops. Yeah.
Right. It's Daisy, the estate's pony.
Oh, I thought we were canonically changing Mango to the Charity's trusty steed.
Oh, Mango is every animal in this story for the rest of time.
There's a horse with a light green tail.
If we mention any animal of the Gold Tree Estate, it is actually Mango. Right. Just know that it has big bulging eyes every time.
Terrifying.
I'm imagining a horse with just Mango eyes, just like licks his eyeball.
Yep. A big, like an Irish wolfhound.
Yeah. Right.
Big, just bulging eyeballs. Every butterfly you see, it's Mango. It's really distressing.
All the flowers, all the trees.
Yep. Yeah, wow. Yep.
A single orgasm.
Stop now, please.
There's a single orchid that is Junior.
Yeah. But, you hear Charity's shrill voice pierce the otherwise relaxing day. Sylvester, where is she?
This way, madam. I shall show you.
Time is of the essence, Sylvester. Yes, we have to find her.
Of course, madam. This way.
And since you're peeking around the tree, Violet, you can see both your parents and Sylvester, the head butler, approaching you. And as they get closer and as your parents see you, they kind of move ahead of Sylvester. But having done this several times before for other reasons, Sylvester kind of gives you the hand signal that this is good news. And
yeah.
you are not in trouble or in going to be punished in any way. Mm-hmm. This is good news.
Yeah, I imagine Violet, when she peeks around the tree, registers her parents and then looks directly, makes eye contact with Sylvester of like, what is happening right now?
I feel like this is what happens at the Gold Tree Estate every time somebody else shows up or something.
Your uncle has just written me right. The most interesting letter.
Violet, where are you? You have to hear this. And Charity rushes off of the back of Mango alongside Kenjamin Goldtree.
And Kenjamin looks at you with that kind of fatherly, like, not smugness, but he's like looking at you like he's also excited, but not really showing it too much. Yes, dear. This is actually quite a unique event.
Show her the invite. Show her the invite. And I'm just pushing Kenjamin towards Violet.
onward, yeah. Yes.
And Kenjamin just walks at his normal pace.
Is not moved at all.
Yep.
Violet, like, stands up, brushes her dress off, and has her hair, though Val's hair normally is quite short, has mysteriously grown.
Of course, naturally.
To flowing locks, and so she will kind of fix it back up and pin it up to the style of the day.
Important question. What color is Violet's hair? Because I'm imagining Charity's hair as just like bright red, like a flame atop her head.
If that is the family characteristic, I'm fine with Violet's hair also being okay.
Guys,
red.
Look, I don't want to get into the biomechanics of Rixia in this moment, but right now, as far as the fiction is concerned, a grung and a dwarf had a human baby. So you can make whatever hair
human
color.
Asterisk baby.
Well,
that
right.
is why it's
exactly.
an asterisk baby, yes.
And Kenjamin reaches into his pocket and takes out a slightly crumpled invite with the wax seal broken and hands it to you.
Violet will take this, and as she normally does and has been trained and practiced to do, she will read the invitation aloud. The company of the Gold Tree family is requested at Feathertop Manor for the Emerald Gala, hosted by Lady Florentina Feathertop and her beloved nephew, Sir Quincy Feathertop. Violet reads this out loud. And it takes a moment to sink in of like, wait, the Emerald Gala? It's here already?
Apparently so. It seems to be quite a auspicious event, wouldn't you say, Violet? I'm surprised the Gold Tree family got an invite this year.
What are you talking about, Kenjamin? Of course we got invited. Do you know how hard I worked last year to get us this? Violet, this is your chance. This is the moment I've been waiting for my whole life.
Your whole life?
Your whole life, Violet. This is the moment you've been waiting for your whole life. You and Quincy, this is the moment.
The moment for what, Mother?
Oh, you know. You know.
I think Violet... does not respond and just like looks to the side and like side eyes Kendrimon of like, Dad. What Dad, I thought we talked about this.
What your mother means to say, Violet. Sylvester, why don't you take this one?
I love that this family dynamic is two dads and a mom for Violet.
But also, is that not the regular dynamic of the Golden Tree Guild in a great many ways? Just like shifted one over, you know?
Right.
Yes, as you say, sir. This is a great honor, Violet. The gala is the event, and yes, it would be proper to go.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Sir, I believe you could have, yes.
That is correct. The Emerald Gala. It is the, pardon the pun, jewel of the social season each year. Only the most interesting of guests and most prominent of families are invited to a week-long event of multiple activities, multiple balls, social events, and a great many other things. As the family reads and rereads the invitation, they realize that it will be held in only 1 week's time. They have but a few days to prepare, to get ready, and to get on the road. This year's theme, the invitation explains, shall be Saints and Demons. Attendees, of course, should be prepared for dress codes, including high fashion, high fast business casual, and high slow regal pomp, among others.
Can I clarify what high, slow, regal pomp?
No. No, you cannot.
If you don't know, you don't know.
If you don't know, you should maybe send the invitation back.
And Charity just looks at you, Violet, like, oh, I know. I know.
I've done the reading.
Right. We'll get you ready. Don't you worry.
Sylvester will turn to Charity.
Ma'am, shall I notify the help that the dresses need to be brought out?
Yes, of course, at once. Thank you, Sylvester.
Very well, ma'am. Sir, madam.
And Sylvester will kind of bow to each person and then head back down the path. It's going to be a silly question, but just to clarify, was Charity the only one on the horse?
No.
The rest of us were running,
I imagine. 110%. Okay,
yes, perfect. That's how the
Especially
Gold Tree...
one horse. It's not all three of you on one
horse.
Yeah,
no. That's how the Gold Tree Estate has always worked. It's always been Kendrimon and Charity riding on top of Mango, and then Sylvester just sprinting
or just like a light, sensible jog.
Right. Exactly.
I imagine Mango is like a little pony.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. All right, so
with big bulging eyes.
Yeah.
A stout pony to carry a dwarf and a strong woman.
As wide as he is tall. It's very off-putting.
With the bulging eyes.
He was not from a high pedigree breeder, shall we say.
Fair.
You found him in the woods out back. Mm-hmm. But he has served you well.
Correct.
So Sylvester will turn and head back to the house.
Kendrimon looks towards you, Violet, and says, come along, dear. I think your mother has preparations that need to be made. But I do want to ask, how do you feel about this invitation? Is this something you are excited about, apprehensive of?
I am very excited that we have received such a prestigious invite to an event that Mama here has been looking forward to since my birth, I presume.
Maybe before.
Yeah, before you were born, Violet. Like
maybe beforehand, too.
Though you do know me, and I do have some apprehensions of week-long festivities, but I have no doubt that I shall persevere.
Yes, I think you get that from your father.
Violet chuckles, and as she and her parents turn back towards the house, her mind does not go towards the lack of alone time that will happen at the gala, but to one person in particular who she knows will be there and is remembering their last interaction, which ended in her favor, but she doesn't know if it made them an enemy.
And so the Gold Tree estate whirs into a frenzy of activity and preparation. A few days of final dressmaking, of packing, of chartering, of coaches and such, and making general arrangements that come with having such a prominent estate are all taken care of over the next several days. After much preparation, the Gold Trees head out. I'll ask, what are you guys traveling in? Is Loyal Steed Mango pulling the family carriage? Who all is coming with you? And what is the Gold Tree family wagon look like as it goes over the road for several days?
So I will say Charity Gold Tree never goes anywhere without the trusted family butler, Sylvester Lynn. So obviously the two of them are around.
Naturally.
And of course, the family wagon is being carried or is being pulled by the trusty steed, Mango.
Or carried, you know, whatever. Yeah, he's very squat. We established it.
Right. He is a very dense child. So is capable of pulling the wagon all by himself.
Is that why it takes several days?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone else got there like 4 days ago and we just show up on the fifth day.
No, we just have to leave early.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that the Gold Tree family has several wagons.
At least two, probably. Yeah.
Well, they have a wagon for about town. They have the weekend wagon. They have the road trip wagon. You know, a wagon for all occasions.
And the racing wagon.
Yes, naturally. The Mad Max wagon.
And so this is probably a well-covered canopied, the wagon that you take when you're going to...
It's the hard top wagon.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Fully covered.
And so Kendrimin Goldtree is sitting next to his lovely wife, Charity, as he stares out the window and futzes with his puzzle cube. He is making small talk to Violet and Sylvester.
I feel that Violet is earnestly attempting to read quietly, and her father is fully okay with the occasional yes, of course.
The participatory kind of,
Because I feel like it also might just be he normally is just talking out loud to himself while solving his puzzles. And is happy to have some company. And that's great. But Violet's mouth will not be satisfied with the same level of participation.
No.
And I think requires the full attention of everyone in this close quarters carriage. Yes.
And I think a lot of that conversation, too, as we get closer to the Feathertop Estate, is Charity just fussing with your hair, your hat, your meticulously crafted, what was it, high-low pomp?
High slow regal pump?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I might not know what the dress code is, but I remember.
Yes. I don't. Yeah. And I wrote it and said it. So.
And she has spent the past several days with you just making sure that this dress fits perfectly to attract the attention of a certain young Quincy Feathertop.
So there are formal mother machinations, though, of that is your goal.
Right.
Does Violet know of your machinations, or is this something that Charity is like, no, if Violet knows my plans, everything is ruined. She must think this is her own idea.
I think this is very obvious. Okay. I think from the beginning, it's everyone else knows that the Emerald Gala is kind of this event where people schmooze, they kind of get together, and it's not necessarily a entirely romantic event. No. People are there for status, for company, that kind of stuff. But Charity has her eyes set on making sure that her daughter gets matched up with the most eligible man there, of course, Quincy Feathertop.
Of course.
And is putting in all the effort. She is she has sacrificed. She has bled for this moment. And she has bequeathed her favorite green dress to her daughter for this event to appear presentable at the Emerald Gala.
I feel like this has been a debate Violet and Charity have had. Like, is it too on the nose to come to the Emerald Gala in Emerald?
You may have tried to debate. Yeah, this was decided for you long ago, unfortunately. So that is what you were appearing in.
It was very weird that as you were trying on all those dresses, there was really only one color.
Correct.
And Kenjamin will say, as he like looks up from his cube, despite any reservations you may have, Violet, you do look stunning in that green dress.
Doesn't she? I know. She looks great. Of course she looks great.
I feel like Violet and her father exchanged like a knowing glance where it's like, thank you, Papa. And it's just Violet, like, I feel like there's like the Violet moment and the Val moment. Where Val knows this is happening, yes. And it's like, she has like the knowledge she is a character in a book.
Yep.
But like in this moment, it's like Val's like, what if I just jump out? Like, yes, could I still get the book if I just jump out right now?
It's tuck and roll, and roll.
You know, Val has a lot of experience in libraries. Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, breaking the fourth wall. Val, for those who somehow have jumped into episode 100 and aren't familiar, Val is the normal character of Sophie. I would say that Val, because you are, again, you guys are both your characters and these fictional characters all at the same time. Val would be familiar with the mysterious, deep, abiding power of narrative momentum. And yeah. And if you jump out, that's like, oh, I'm going to jump out of the raft on this white water river. Mm-hmm. And
then be washed ashore to where you were already going.
Right. You'll either be carried much more roughly to the same location, or you'll just be bashed against some rocks. And maybe you'll still make it to the end of the exactly where you're going to be, or lost in the woods to dehydrate if that makes, you know, if that kind of continues to give you that illusion of player choice.
Yes. So Val, I think, will in turn like take a deep breath and like re-enter the full character of Violet and be like, Sylvester, any idea how close we are to Feathertop Manor?
Yes, ma'am. I believe we are only but a day out.
Thank you.
And Kenjamin, after, I imagine, a while where the conversation has like lulled a little bit, we'll turn to Sylvester again and say, Sylvester, have you heard of this latest drama with the Fitzhughes? I believe that one of the young women of the Fitzhugh family, what was her name?
It was Jocelyn Fitzhugh, dear.
Right. Jocelyn Fitzhugh. Yes, I believe she got in a bit of trouble, but can't seem to remember what it was for the life of me.
Yes, I believe she ran off with one of these servants that she fell in love with, sir. I believe that is where she earned the suffix perfectly. Jocelyn fits you perfectly.
Oh. And that's this week's 100 episodes.
How do you
good
even
run.
Get
what?
That?
Like, I can't tell if it's like dirty.
Seems inappropriate.
It does, but you can't figure out why. Like
that's the I have a clear picture. Thank you.
That's the kind of the Regency of like, well, obviously we don't have the cultural context for what this means, but the people of the time, oh, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenjamin, trying his best to keep it in. Yes, that Jocelyn. I dare say her choices may make things difficult for her sister in particular, Kimberly Fitzhugh.
Well, sir, I'm sure that while that may seem the case now, given time, I'm sure it will blow over much like anything else.
I think, Father, you underestimate the force that is Kimberly Fitzhugh's.
And you know, the court does not forget. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more rumors about Jocelyn and Kimberly when we get there.
So Sylvester will kind of sit back, and similar to the Violet-Val dynamic, there are kind of two almost at odds consciousnesses inside Sylvester. One of them is Sylvester Lynn, the head butler, and the other is Selv Asterlin, who is trying his hardest to remember which utensils go where. And so he keeps starting with the outside and just this mantra in his head of
dessert spoon, dessert fork, soup spoon.
Soup fork.
I just love the idea of checkers somehow in this library universe mind link into Selv's mind and be like, it's soup fork. It's always soup fork.
It's always soup fork.
Don't forget the soup fork. Selv, don't forget. You need it. You're gonna look stupid if you forget the soup fork.
The soup fork, right? The soup fork. No. There is. How do you? No.
So there's just this quiet kind of. While trying to maintain propriety and stoicism, there's still this part of him that is trying to figure out which utensils, number one, go where and what he's supposed to be eating with at what particular time. Because Sylvester knows, but Selv has to concentrate on it to get that information.
I feel like every so often we see Sylvester like twitch, like eye twitch.
Or there's like a loud bang from outside and you see like Sylvester will just like into like a combat stance and then just be like, what am I doing?
Sylvester, are you okay? Did you forget your soup fork at home?
No, sir, I packed an extra.
Good man.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the Midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless the Snack series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
And so, verily. Do the Gold Tree family continue along their way? And this feels like a good time to talk a little bit about the Rixian Regency period. Now, this is something that probably some of the characters know, and some of the players know, and definitely Kaskrin Brightmane, the dwarven warlock, noted fan of a variety of romance novels, would know. The Rixian Regency period, much like here in the Earth world, the meat space, describes a very specific period in Rixian history, which is several hundred years ago, during a particularly low magic period of history. It is definitely a very traditional, you know, kind of tradition-focused time period. Lot of emphasis on etiquette, on decorum, on society, you know, kind of your social standing, as well as expressing yourself through kind of a variety of artistic skills, experiences, expertise, education, and skills being kind of very prized. These traditions, unlike the Earth Regency period, don't include things like sexual purity and, you know, treating people like property, for example. But in this period, especially in kind of the upper crust where you guys are in this portion of the world, these sorts of traditions are the bedrock of your community. And a thing also, a chain for some people. For many, it is, you know, empowering to know kind of how society is supposed to work. For others, they may not like being told what to do and how to do it. But that is what we shall be exploring here today in this game. And it is a game of my own design.
Hey. Ooh,
we have talked about it a little bit in our Patreon episodes. Go support us, patreon.com/recklessattack. But long story short, we'll get into some of the details as we roll them, but lots of just emotions and archetypes and nonsense lay ahead of you. But enough of that. Because before you all, behind what can only be acres of beautiful, well-kept property is the estate, the manor of the Feathertops. The Feathertop family is by far the most wealthy, the most respected, the most well-connected, the oldest family in the region. When you speak of society, you may as well be speaking of the Feathertops. They are preposterously well off. So, as you guys are going down this large drive, presumably there are other carriages now as well with other people who are attending, who are also arriving from as far away perhaps as you have, maybe even farther. Help me describe some of the things that you see as you truck your way down, maybe even as you arrive at this preposterously large residence, if you can even call it that.
As we gaze upon the estate of the Feathertops, we pass the large lake in front of the main house, and our carriage rolls past it through manicured lawns, through fields of crops that are being tended to. And we continue and continue. As we get to the main grand building, we see that it's actually not the main house. And our carriage is actually ushered through a set of very tall columns. And we actually enter into a rotunda that is this pantheon, like this covered, I guess, pavilion.
Mm-hmm, totally.
But like it is like a Buckingham fountain.
Absolutely.
In the middle of this rotunda that is just to receive carriages. Like, this is the size of the Gold Tree home, and it is their garage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yep.
And all along this rotunda, as the carriages file in one by one, we are greeted by not only this display of wealth, but also by the Feathertop namesake, a variety of feather trees surrounding the entirety of this rotunda. And these feather trees, you know, grow tall and have feathers instead of leaves.
Wow.
I'm here for it, yeah.
But you can see that the feathers waft from the trees like the Japanese blossoms in spring.
What colors are they?
I want to say like browns and whites and blues.
And probably some actual gold. Like shiny-ish. Like maybe that there's like one tree. Like maybe it's part of this kind of center display. Mm-hmm. But there is one that you would swear that these leaves are golden.
Can I add something incredibly stupid?
We've gotten to the multi-car rotunda receiving area that is the size of your house.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
So I'm imagining that in addition to the feather trees for which the Feathertop Estate is named, the Feathertops are a bit of an odd bunch in some ways. And one of those ways is that they actually just have a whole bunch of wandering birds around their estate. And I'm thinking like big turkeys. I'm thinking like ducks and geese.
And it's a menagerie of, there's not like an iconic one bird. It is birds. Just there are birds here.
I think the iconic bird is the peacock, but they have a bunch of them and it is forbidden to interact negatively with these birds. Like, if you see them around, you leave them alone.
You're probably not allowed to act positively or neutrally to these creatures either. Yeah. Do not make eye contact with these birds.
And alongside the massive flock of birds that are just wandering around when people are entering and pulling up to the estate, there's an army of help and servants as well, just cleaning up after the birds. So the place looks pristine. But there's ducks wandering around, there's turkeys wandering around, and you gotta be careful not to step over them, or you gotta be careful not to, like, accidentally step on them, because that is one of the biggest social faux pas you can make at Feathertop Estate.
This is not... We haven't even started playing the game yet.
Yes.
And I, the creator, am already going to break a rule.
Cool.
Or ask for something outside of the normal rules. Could you, Charity Goldtree,
yes,
could you please make me a stoicism check?
So, Charity is not the most stoic person. And on the spectrum of the way this game works, there's stoicism and there's passion. And I, Charity, am a very passionate person. You know?
Naturally.
Yeah, given the way that I interact with my family, with my friends, I'm a very outspoken individual. So stoicism is not easy for me. I am only rolling a single d6, and this, I understand, is a dice pool game. So a single d6 is about the lowest that you can realistically roll.
It is, in fact, the lowest. Yeah. I have decided you can't have a zero.
Okay, thank
you. So I would actually be adding some difficulty to what I'm actively asking you to do, but you just can't go any lower than what you have. So roll me a d6, please.
And I rolled a 1
on that d6. That is a critical failure.
Oh, great.
But really, you were not rolling for Charity. You're lightly rolling for Checkers and Charity.
Okay.
Because one of the birds is very familiar to Checkers in an instinctual kind of way. In that it is, how best to describe it? Kind of like dire ostrich. Yeah. Is that a fair way of kind of putting it?
Yes.
And somewhere deep inside the recesses of Charity's mind is a primal urge to run away, and you have critically failed this in this not most dire moment. This is obviously, you're not even really technically making your first impressions yet to everyone, but there are people here. How does Charity react to this kind of like sudden panic?
So the first impression is always important, right? People, when you first step out of the carriage, that's the first time people get to see you. They see your clothing. They see the way that you present yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And Charity, instead of kind of stepping out of the carriage with this regal manner, you just see her like hunched over, just muttering her to herself. Just like, where is it? Where is it? I know it's here somewhere. Benjamin, where is it? Did you see it? And just like grabbing your sleeve, like, I know it's here.
I can't say I have the foggiest idea to what you're referring to, my dear.
At this point, Sylvester will actually take a shawl from inside the carriage and drape it over Charity's shoulders and say,
Ma'am, yes, your shawl is right here.
Oh, it's my nerves, Kentman. Thank you, Sylvester. I appreciate it.
Of course, madam.
My nerves are getting to the better of me today. And she looks a little bit more feeble than she usually does as she walks into the estate.
One of the attendants actually steps up to you guys as you are kind of starting to exit your carriage in this line of other carriages. It is a very efficient system. Mm-hmm. They are moving these carriages, what kind of handful there are, very quickly and efficiently. Like, I'm talking Disney World, getting off the Haunted Mansion level of, like, we keep it moving. And
I would like to interject.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like Violet to have, like, a slight main character moment where she is the last one out of the carriage and takes a moment as she has a little bit of a vantage point and will kind of peek her head out while holding Sylvester's hand and take a quick glance around. Maybe not quick, as she is scanning the crowd and also trying to be seen by the crowd. Some things her mom, Charity, taught her did stick.
Nice.
So this attendant, who is, we'll say, a tall elven woman, wearing a very neat outfit, a very fancy outfit, an almost militaristic kind of feel to it, and wearing a cape made out of the golden feathers from the centerpiece tree that you are all around, extends a hand to each of you as you are getting off of your carriage and says, "Welcome, welcome, dear cherished guests. May I escort you to the grounds proper?"
And Kenjamin is like, has extended his arm towards Charity, and they're kind of like walking arm in arm now. And he says, "That would be wonderful. You have an incredible estate here. Truly magnificent."
"Thank you, sir. We strive very hard to ensure it stands up to the rigors and qualities expected of a family as respected as the Feathertops. Please."
And she helps Violet come off of the carriage as you kind of have this moment and take everything in, and I'm imagining the camera pans around from your face kind of over the shoulders of the Gold Tree family, and she says very simply, "Welcome to Feathertop Manor." And before you see an even bigger building.
The foyer.
Yeah.
It's a bigger building.
Right. Yeah. This is, again, this is the garage. And behind it is what is only identifiable as a palace. Like, it probably was an actual palace at some point, like some king's weird summer home 100 years ago.
I am very much picturing Versailles. And, like, we are just now getting to, like, the courtyard. We haven't even seen the grounds behind it yet.
Correct.
It's just like, we got like a 20-minute walk to the front door.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And you already see there are a lot of people milling around. Not tons and tons. You certainly know that this is going to be a large event, but there are already a lot of other families that you maybe do recognize and maybe you don't recognize, who are already here, maybe exploring the grounds, who are also kind of walking from their carriages up to what is the equivalent of 10 houses stacked on top of each other, essentially.
As we get closer to the actual house, or what could be the servants' quarters that then we go past to get to the actual house, there is out front an enormous boulder that has been carved to look like a bird in flight. And on that bird, all over it, are actual feathers that have been placed into the boulder. And as you get closer, the part that actually makes up the feather, it is actually the names of the families that are attending the gala. And so the idea is you go up there and you actually pick out your feather for your family. And that is kind of, you hand that to the person who will be announcing you, and then they can announce you properly when you enter the gala for whatever event it's going to be.
God, I love how extra the feather tops are.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I am here for it.
They got their name like 200 years ago, and they just went hard on it.
Feather tops, everybody.
Yeah, right.
I feel like they made their own version of like rock, paper, scissors. Feather wins everything.
The four of you are directed to grab your, I guess, announcement feather and led further onto this incredible, lush estate. You are brought straight up to the front doors, which tower multiple stories above you. There are gorgeous windows. There are incredible little frescoes and details all over this place that have tons of little sculptures. And even now that you're closer, you can see that in a rare bit of magic for this time, kind of belying their power and potentially the age of this manor estate, the side of the house, if you can call it that, is the sky. It is the color of the sky perfectly, maybe give or take 30 minutes from now. So if it is towards the end of the day, it's a little darker. There's maybe a couple more clouds, but just enough so that it stands out against the actual background around you. You are ushered in to this grand place. In front of you is giant stairways, two on either side of you, but that is not your destination. You walk past these giant regal staircases with pieces of art everywhere. A perfume smell hits you, and this feeling of perfect temperature all at once, and you are stopped outside of a double door on the other side of this entrance. The attendant takes your feather from one of you and hands it to another attendant. The first attendant bows and she turns and starts walking back out. The second attendant looks at you, bows, stands upright, opens the door slightly, passes the feather into another attendant, closes the door and bows to you, and then steps to the side. You have just enough time to brush off any bits of road dust, to touch up makeup, to do whatever it is that you care to do. And you would have known that this was happening. You've had some time to kind of do a little pit stop ahead of time, you know, 15 minutes out.
I feel like this is where Charity busts out like a fanny pack. Like, like the wedding planner emergency fanny pack that is carried around on wedding day and is just like combing over Violet.
Yes.
Yep.
Like a wedding coordinator would do, like right before a bride is about to go down the aisle.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
This is just a smaller version of Charity's wedding go bag by the door in case
in case a wedding breaks.
I feel like that is not at the door. Sylvester is made to carry it everywhere he goes.
In case a suitor comes by.
Yeah, asking for your hand in marriage. Like, yeah. Charity is ready.
The second Quincy appears, Charity is ready.
Yes.
The go bag must be within 3 steps of Sylvester
at all times. Handcuffed to his wrist.
Yeah.
Last touch-ups are done. Shirts are unruffled. And all of those last minute preparations are done. Just in time for you all to hear a booming voice on the other side of these doors say, "Presenting Charity and Kenjamin Goldtree, escorting their daughter, Violet." And the doors swing open simultaneously. And inside of this room, as you are
kind of ceremoniously, unceremoniously shoved through this door is a grand ballroom. There are already 100, maybe 200 people here. They are on the floor in front of you on either side, kind of making an aisle. There are people up on an overlooking second floor that are already mingling and chatting, maybe sharing drinks, sharing laughs and whispers. And everyone turns to look at you as you are presented. At the end of this procession are two people seated on a dais, both overlooking the festivities. Now, I would like to invite Sophie to please describe what Quincy Feathertop looks like.
Quincy Feathertop is fairly tall for the woman sitting next to him. You can tell is quite, we'll say, I don't know, like demure. Mm-hmm. And he's doing his best to stand stoically and at attention. But there's an air that he is over this. Like, he is bored and could be doing something better with his time. He has light brown skin and wavy dark hair that ends at his shoulders. It's kind of swept back. He has a, like, short, well-kept beard. And if someone were to look very closely, could probably see indents on his nose that might align with glasses and somebody who wears them quite frequently, but are not appropriate for such a formal occasion.
And formal it is, because he is kind of wearing a dressier version of what you guys saw some of the attendants wearing, except his is shock white. There are almost no details other than a little bit of gold filigree here and there, but he is also wearing a cape made of the feather top tree plumage, I suppose. But his is also stark white, just going all the way down to the ground. He is, again, looking very bored, but notices when the gold trees come in. But so does the individual sitting next to him. She is an older woman who also has presumably dyed black hair, pushed back, hair cut just under the jaw, with severe eyes that are immediately appraising everyone in the room. She is wearing a much more ornate gown, black and red, with lots of feathers and filigrees and different shades, almost like a feathery inferno. This is Florentina Feathertop, Lady of the Estate, Aunt of Quincy, and the most important person in this room. As you all step into this place filled with other members of high society, you hear Florentina's voice ring out just above the din, which naturally quiets as she speaks and says simply, "Welcome to the Emerald Gala." And that is where we'll pick up next week. Happy episode 100, hey! Everybody! Hey!
Bye,
Regency.
Everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
I can't, like, just imagining, anyway, we can cut this, just imagining just Donald Sutherland sitting in his exact Pride and Prejudice office, but just doing a Rubik's Cube. It's just like...
I didn't describe it. The rest of his office has like little gyroscopes and that little single arm like flailing thing on his desk that just like rotates all the time.
Oh, yeah. Like perpetual motion.
The wall thing.
Little click, clack.
And that's all. I just, it was such an incredible image that I couldn't excise it.